Very interesting theory emerges if you associate or parallel line two different pieces in the Nitziv, two different statements or commentaries in Parshas Shmos about the nature of anti-Semitism. I'm recording this year, January 2020. Obviously, this is a period in which, sadly, we've seen anti-Semitism, violent anti-Semitism, verbally violent, physically violent, lethal anti-Semitism resurfacing across the world in different formats. And obviously, we process it sociologically, politically, militarily. Where does it come from? How can it be uprooted? But as Jews, we obviously believe in larger forces that dictate human experience, metaphysical realities. And of course, we also believe in the cyclical nature of history. So there are certain patterns that are woven into the fabric of human history that shape and influence the arc of human history, in particular anti-Semitism and the way the world relates to Jews. And even if you interview your average anti-Semite, he may not be able to articulate that it's based on these prophetic statements in Chazal. We certainly feel that they're true, even if they can't be detected by sociologists. So the Nitziv has some very interesting comments, and if you look at each comment independently, they seem to contradict, which is not at all surprising because anti-Semitism is in many ways a contradictory experience. For example, in today's world, anti-Semitism in the United States is being driven by white supremacists who feel that the Jews are part of this pluralistic society that's violating or compromising the purity of the American identity, the American race, far right, white supremacists. In Europe, anti-Semitism is being driven by far left liberals who view the Jewish state and the Jewish people as globalist powers that subjugate the Palestinians and subjugate. You can't ever imagine far left wingers in Europe sitting at the same table with the white supremacists of America, and they're united only by their hatred of Jews. So it's not surprising to find the Nitziv offer contradictory reasons for anti-Semitism, but I think if you think a little bit more deeply, they don't seem so contradictory at all. So let's first discuss the Nitziv's two ideas and then how they interact. When the Torah describes the population expansion of the Jewish people, it employs a very interesting phrase. The phrase is, Uvnei Yisrael paru vayishritzu vayirbu vayatzmu b'mod mod. The Jewish people expanded exponentially. Vatimale haaretz osam. And the land was filled with them. Now, on a purely grammatical level, it shouldn't have written Vayimaleh or Vatimaleh Haaretz Osam, Vatimaleh Haaretz Mehem, from them. And in fact, that's how Unkelus interprets it, which just corroborates that from a purely grammatical standpoint, if there were no secondary intent or secondary meaning, it should have written Mehem. The language of Unkelus is V'ismelias Ara Minhon. Yet the Torah writes Vatimaleh Haaretz Osam. So the Nitziv claims that essentially, as Yaakov died, the Jews shifted into a much more integrated and immersed style of living. Yaakov had envisioned a more separate style where the Jews were located in their own. I don't like to use the word ghetto because to me the word ghetto carries Holocaust connotations. And certainly people use that word as an insulated, autonomous Jewish area of Goshen. But the Jews, at least after Yaakov died, decided to become more absorbed in society, more integrated in society. And you witness this during Makas Bechoros, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to skip over or pass over Jewish homes as he's administering punishments to the Egyptian homes. And if the Jews lived in Goshen, then it wouldn't have been skipping over a home when passing over large zones. Goshen would have been passed over as HaKadosh Baruch Hu navigated his way through the broader Egypt that night. So it seems as if the Jews began to spread, and not just Makas Bechoros, but many of the Makos. So, Vatimaleh Haaretz Osam doesn't just mean that the larger population count had more Jews as the Jews expanded, but the Eretz, the lands, the provinces, the cities, the hamlets, became populated by Jews. And the Nitziv associates this with a Medrash in Shir HaShirim in Shmos Rabbah, that when Yosef dies, and that's a little bit after Yaakov's death, but Yosef is dying, and another throwback to an earlier era is deceasing, the Jews halted Milah. And Milo was another cultural, national marker. The Jews were now different because they had Milo, although it sounds as if Yosef had some program to at least encourage Milo across the broader Egyptian population. But and there's a chazal that the Mitzrayim want to have food, and Yosef will only deliver food if they accept Mila. But it's not clear how successful that was. But the Jews clearly had marked themselves and had identified themselves as different through their bris Mila. But now that Yosef had passed, Mila was no longer that cultural marker. So the Jews are becoming less autonomous, less separate, less independent, less marked, less identified. And this dovetails with a general chazal, which, interestingly enough, the Nitziv doesn't quote, that the last three remaining cultural markers of the Jews were their names and their clothing and their language, but it sounds as if their living habitats and their physical bodies at least became much more Egyptian. Now, say what you want about assimilation and absorption, and obviously there's a lot to speak about vis-a-vis our own development and our own religious identity, but the Nitziv, and here's the Nitziv's metaphysical claim, believes that this is one of the roots of anti-Semitism. That when the nations see us as integrating with them, as percolating or innervating all of society, then there's a hatred that is aroused. And that hatred is aroused based on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's original master plan. Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu scripts the experience of Gullus at Bris Ben HaBesarim, He announces to Avraham, Ki ger yizaracha bi'eretz lelehem. We see this as a sentence, that you'll be subjugated and punished. The Nitziv sees this partially as a blueprint, that if the Jews enter foreign lands and retain their itinerant foreign status and maintain their own personal selective identity, then that model will be more sustainable and everyone will, as we would say, play happily together in the sandbox. But if the Jews become too assimilated, they abdicate their unique habitats, they abdicate their unique bodily markers, then that will incite hatred from the Gentiles. Now, why it does, it's interesting why it should. You would think that Gentiles would be more comfortable when Jews become more assimilated, more like them, less identifiable, less different. But that's woven into the fabric of history. I'll get to this a little bit later. But a few psukim later, when this new king arises, Vayakam Melech Hadash Asher Lo Yadas Yosef, a new king, and he starts to be neurotic and obsessed with the Jews, Vayomer Elamo, this is two psukim later, Hine Am B'nei Yisrael Ravi Atzum Mimenu. So he's conspiring against the Jews, and he refers to them as a people. Now, the Nitziv hears echoes of Haman's concern. Hine Yeshno Am, Mefuzar or Mefarad Bein Ha'amim, but Dasei HaMelech Einam Osim. They're very different. They're separate. They're a separate nation. They've got their separate codes. And on this pasuk, the Nitziv writes, stunningly, in direct contrast to what he wrote before, the Nitziv writes that part of what incited the hostility was that they were an Am, and that they were seen as different, and their patterns were different, their cultural patterns. Actually, now that I'm reading it in the Nitziv inside, for some reason which I'm not aware of, maybe people who have learned more of the Nitziv than I have can maybe comment or private message me, it doesn't appear in my version of the Hamikdavar, but it does appear in the online version of the Hamikdavar. So just if you're following, this is in Perek Aleph Pasuk Tes, Hine Am B'nei Yisrael. So again, in my original version, it doesn't appear, but in a different version, it does appear, and I'll read you the language because I have it copied on my phone. I took it from the Bar Ilan. Am B'nei Yisrael, Lashon Am Mashmo, Minhag B'fnei Atzmo. They have their own customs. Okay. De'af Olgav Shaharbe Ratzu L'Hitchakos Al Masim Mitzrayim. Many people wanted to be more similar culturally, living conditions, body markers, they want to be similar to the Egyptians. It's impossible. There were some Jews who were much more identified as Jews, and they kept to themselves, and they were separate in a very visible fashion. And that gave the impression that led to the hatred. So this is the exact opposite result. It wasn't that the Jews were trying to assimilate into society and incorporate into society and engage in society, but it was specifically the autonomous nature of the Jews. They were a separate tribe. They kept to themselves, their style, their clothing, their speech, their language. So at a certain point, you have to ask the Nitziv, make up your mind. What causes anti-Zionism? The desire of Jews to be more similar, as his first statement suggests, or the differences that Jews maintain in their look, in their appearance, and in their conduct? And as I said before, to a degree, that's part of the mystery of anti-Semitism, is that it can stem from not just different, but contradictory sources, as it does in our world. But I think that if you fuse these two nitzivs, you come away with a very interesting theory that I think that sometimes people are uncomfortable specifically because we are integrated, but yet we're different. And it's not just they don't know what to make of us, but it's almost as if there's a latent fear. Like if we would be a separate tribe and a separate people, we were the Amish or we were some Australian indigenous tribe that clearly severed ourselves from the modern world and weren't involved in leading humanity and engaging in the world of finance and politics and medicine and science, they were clearly apart, then we'd be a quaint nation and we'd be the source of documentaries and people would but we're at the forefront of society and we're influencers and our contribution and the way that we shape human experience, well, then if we decide to join them, well, then we'd be identical to them and we'd just become part of the broader mass of humanity. But Jews have this very almost, I'd say inconsistent, but it's dichotomous experience that we're engaged with the world, we drive the world, we obviously impact the world, but that we're very different. And of course, we're very different because HaKadosh Baruch Hu requested and mandated us to be a tribe unto ourselves, to lead the world and to inspire the world to something different. And that's, I think, what triggers some of the uncertainty and the unknown and the fear and the response. Here's this tribe that obviously has very, very unique cultural customs and has a very strong communal identity, and Jews across the world band together and support common agendas and deliver charity to one another. But they're not just distilling or creating that tribal identity as a autonomous margin of humanity, but we're pooling our resources so that we can impact humanity. And deep down, I think that causes a lot of consternation. We know it shouldn't because we're humanists and universalists and we have the interests of the entire world in our hearts and in our minds. But I think for the world at large, it can feel a little bit, it's not conspiratory, but it can feel a little bit different. Here's a people that has a message for us and wants to influence us, but yet they don't want to join us. And that's, as I said before, woven into the fabric of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan, selecting Avram to be a different people, but not to sever from humanity. So I was reading this nitziv, and these two ideas seemed to be dichotomous and contradictory and clashing. And then when I thought about it, I said, well, isn't that what anti-Semitism is based on? The clash and the merging of these two seemingly antithetical ideas.